Hello and welcome to Improv Friday Radio Interview in Depth, a feature of the Improv Friday Radio Podcast Series. I'm your host, Jim Gooden, and in this episode I talk to composer, looper, multi-instrumentalist Steve Moyes. Moyes, who is based in England, talks about his background, his use of the Mobius looping software, his instruments, thoughts about Improv Friday, the gathering, and much, much more. This interview conversation was previously recorded via Skype. Along with my in-depth interview with Moyes, I'll be featuring three pieces of his music, beginning with his piece Sycamore, created as part of a previous Improv Friday thread event. And now the work and words of Steve Moyes.
Yeah, well, me and music. Yes, it started very young. It's about the only thing I can remember from my very young days is hearing music. I've got a terrible memory from my childhood and things like that, but I remember hearing things like the Beatles and the Tornadoes. It was all pop music in those days, the early 60s, and yeah, I can remember that stuff, and I just always wanted to be doing music. I had a little toy plastic guitar, I think. I was very young and always wanted to play. And then when I went to school, of course, it was like the usual recorder and that, which I'd been always enjoyed. Going into secondary school, I played clarinet in the concert band. Later on, I played tenor sax in the stage band at school. Oh, this is in Canada by now. I was born here in England, but I went to Canada when I was 5. So a lot of my school music doings were over there. And yeah, I just couldn't get enough of it.
That's similar in a way to many, myself included. Who were the Tornadoes?
Oh, they did a track called Telstar, which is still, even to this day, my favorite piece of music. Instrumental guitar and early sort of electronic keyboard thing, produced by Joe Meek. He was kind of a mad North London producer. He produced a lot of it was pop music, but really interestingly produced, and a lot of strange technological ideas he had. Yeah, he's great. You should really check out Joe Meek. He was, as I say, he was quite mad, and eventually shot his landlady and shot himself.
Gosh. I was going to ask, when you first said that, and thinking about the time you grew up, as well as me, if that was sort of a Ventures type band, but it sounds more progressive than sort of Secret Agent Man.
Sort of along those lines, really. Have a look on YouTube. There's a couple of really strange videos, but yeah, it was definitely melodic pop stuff anyway.
Yeah.
But I liked any music in my young days, even like marching bands and things like that. Loved it all.
Yeah, your things you were describing, particularly when you moved to Canada and your maybe high school years, you were in stage band or jazz band, and me too, that sort of same thing. What took you from England, where you were born, to Canada?
Well, it was the parents just decided to go and try to, like a lot of people did at that time, go and make a new life in a new young country. And yeah, my parents are still there. I ended up coming back here when I left school, not with the intention of staying, but I just did.
Well, maybe in returning to your roots
it's maybe it's largely musical doings that have kept me here, really. Yeah. A lot of opportunities for doing adventurous musical things here, especially around that time, late 70s, early 80s.
Well, it's neat that I think that you've had opportunity to live in kind of two countries, something like that. I often think that's I've always lived in the States. I've traveled, unfortunately not very much to Europe, hope to go next spring, but I think that's great that you've got that multi-world in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I am quite well traveled anyway. I've been to quite a lot of different countries on holidays and things, but yeah, I've been living in the same place for 26 years now. I feel the urge to move at the moment, I think. I've just got nowhere in particular in mind.
Well, hopefully that'll resolve. I know we've talked about that by email and stuff. What was the first instrument? Was it guitar more, or what were the...
No, I had lessons on accordion, actually, when I was very young. As I say, played clarinet and saxophone in high school. And I got my first guitar for, I think, my 16th birthday. Got an electric guitar a couple of years later and started playing in rock bands, really.
I was thinking about, these days, because I think we have some parallels, meaning you play several different instruments, and I do as well. And for me, there was a period of hitting, and it came actually much later. It was in my adult years, but hitting the idea that you kind of come to recognize that all these instruments are related, that if it's string stuff between the guitar, the cello, whatnot, all you're talking about is, you know, different spaces between the strings. And once you kind of realize that, everything's kind of connected. But what's been your thing that unlocked your going from one instrument to the other, maybe realizing that?
Oh, it's just in my nature, I think. I've never been one to stick with one thing. The guitar's the only thing I've really stuck with properly for a very long time. But even then, I've moved away from it at times. Like when I got the cello about 5 or 6 years ago, I was sort of intending to give up the guitar, but of course, get back to it as well. So, yeah, I've given up a fair few instruments over the years, but now the last few years, I'm just accumulating more. Never really learned to play any of them properly, I suppose.
I think that's the magic in a way. I've thought about that, particularly with the things I've taken on. And how did the cello come about? How'd you find that?
Well, it was just looking for a new instrument, and I got into mind. It needed to be something electric, because I wouldn't want to play purely acoustic music, really. I really like electronic processing and things. So I was looking for electronic cellos just out of curiosity, really, on eBay and things. And I just spotted that one. You've seen it. It's a strange rectangular thing.
Yeah, it's quite unusual.
Yeah, I put in a bid on eBay for not very much money. Not really expecting to win it, but I did. It came from a guy in Texas, although it was originally made in England. So it's had quite a story, that instrument. Well, the guy who sold it to me told me it was from the 1950s. Since then, I've had other people saying they don't think it is really, more likely the 70s, but it's a bit of a curiosity.
For our listeners who hadn't ever seen it in picture or on video or whatever, describe the shape, as you will, because it is unusual.
Yeah, it's a narrow, rectangular. It's like a cello with the sides chopped off, really, I suppose you'd say. It's about, just over a foot wide.
Yeah.
And about the length of a normal cello. Quite an ugly thing, I think. It's not robotic by any means. But it sounds okay. It sounds like a normal cello, only not as loud, really. But I always play it amplified, so it's okay.
Because it actually, on everything that I've heard, I mean, it's really neat sound, and the narrower body does not seem, I realize it's more about the top when it's plugged in, but the narrower body does not seem limited. It's kind of a neat sound, and that's something I noticed on that, on some of the recent pieces on IF that you've done. With this cast, we're featuring two pieces of yours.
One's an electric guitar and one's a classical guitar. Both played through the computer. Sycamore is a prepared classical guitar piece played against a couple of delays. It's almost a sitar-y sound.
Wow. With the prepared classical guitar, and it's probably whatever hits you at the time, but what are you using for the prepared stuff?
Oh, it's just a small piece of wood stuck under between the strings and the frets. I just had this piece of wood left over from some project was doing. Can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
It was just the width of a guitar neck, so I just pushed it in there, and it sounded really nice.
Neat.
It's just the right height to make the strings buzz without stopping them.
Okay.
Purely by luck, of course.
Yeah, I know it sometimes is like that. I fight with that. I did a piece on my oud a few weeks ago, and I was trying to get, I don't know, that's still some tone, but enough clearance. And I was kind of headed for the koto sound, but stopped somewhere in between. But what's the, in the other piece, which is, I'm looking at my list here, Falling In, what's that about?
That's an electric guitar piece played through quite a few effects, particularly a thing called crossfade loop synth, which I don't know if you're aware of. It's it sort of plays back what you play into it, a bit like live sampling, but it can play things forwards and backwards and at different speeds. While I was playing the guitar, I was manipulating the software with a pitch bend lever on a keyboard, a constantly changing sound. While I was playing the guitar, that minimal way, I suppose.
Is that a software manipulation or is that hardware?
It's software, yeah.
Huh. It sounds a little bit like the stretching. There's a stretching plug-in, but it's altering time, and correct?
I've used it on quite a few of my IF pieces, and you may have assumed at times that it's Mobius or some more loopy thing.
Yeah. I mentioned in Mobius, that's one thing I did want to talk about, because you've used it a lot, or a lot to me. I mean, I dabbled with it, and just for the listeners, Mobius is a software looping program I can see the creator's name in my head, but it's who's the writer? Who developed it?
Jeff Larson.
Right, and I was real embarrassed because I've had email with Jeff, and I just drawn blank. Apologies, Jeff.
I'm surprised I thought of it.
That'd be really funny if you forgot to, but fortunately you didn't. Anyhow, it's been free for the longest, and I think it still is. A tremendous gift to the world, because I know many people who use it. And talk about Mobius a little bit. Where'd you discover Mobius?
Where did I discover it? I really can't remember, but I did discover it somewhere online. And you and I, as you know, as many people know, are both members of this Looper's Delight mailing list, which is a community of people who make music using live looping technology. I can't remember if I learned about Mobius from there or if I already knew about it before. But, I downloaded Mobius and tried it and didn't really make much progress with it for a long time. And then one day went back to it and sort of things started to fall into place. It can be very, very complex or very simple, depending on how you want to use it, which is great. It's basically just a live looping piece of software where what you play into it, you can play back, so you play along with your own playing. Is that a reasonable description?
Oh yeah, and I've used it, I think, three times with various degrees of time. The longest was this last fall, and I actually took it on the road and used it on some shows out west. And I was using an alternate foot controller that another member from Looper's Delight turned me on to when he saw my note about being on a budget and trying to get something to just turn it on and off. And Reiner Strauschild pointed me to a very clever gaming device that it was very minimal and very cheap and worked.
Yes, yeah, I know the ones. Yeah, I was looking at those myself. I almost got one myself, but they were sort of quite expensive to import, relatively expensive to import, available from the States.
Well, yeah, because it's made, and I'm trying to think of the site, it's made out west, and compared to like the Behringer, the popular, the FC 1010, or there's a popular...
FC 1010, yeah, which is what I use.
Yeah, it was, for me, it was a simpler and cheaper way to go, but it, it led me to, I use Mobius for, I guess, 2 or 3 months, and I it which was always great. I think that there was a feeling of maybe, particularly with traveling with a laptop and using it for other things, I wasn't totally dedicating it to music, which is sometimes important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's what I've found. I have got a laptop that I use purely for music. It never gets connected to the internet or anything else. So that really has made a difference. And the computer as an instrument almost.
I think that's really important with that software, and then it can keep it really stable. Do you use any, with Mobius, do you use any scripting to control anything?
I have recently, I won't even try to describe that because I don't really understand the scripting. I haven't learned to do it properly, but I've tried a couple of scripts that other people have made up and used them a bit. But I've never written any scripts myself. That's quite a learning curve, I think.
Well, it is, and I just began to dance with that a little bit. And for those listening who may not know, it's you can have many macro programs, whatever you want to call them, scripts to run within Mobius that can do things like a timed fade at a certain point in a loop. Or what did you get from other people that you were using?
There's one that I can't think of what it's called, but it chops up the loop into sections and plays the sections at a particular order, which you can program by just putting in a sequence of numbers. If you do it on several loops, which are different lengths, then you can get some quite interesting polyrhythmic type things.
It almost becomes it is composition in a way. It's like serial.
It's like a sequencer, it becomes.
Yeah.
Different pieces of the... If you play different notes, a certain number of notes, so the loop is a certain length, you can almost chop it up and you put the notes into any order, really, or the sounds.
That's really neat. Well, I know you've...
It can create something quite chaotic. Can be quite musical.
Yeah. Well, you've used Mobius in some really creative ways. I think in some ways, without totally singling you out, at least for my audience, you've done some... I think you've gotten very comfortable with it, and compliment you, because I think...
Well, thank you. Thank you, Jim. I really use it in a fairly simple way, but it may not sound like that. I tend to have loops of different lengths which aren't synchronized or quantized to each other in any way. So it makes... They overlap in an almost random way. For some reason, it comes out not sounding random.
Well, it really doesn't. I mean, you've done some beautiful, beautiful pieces, and it's really neat, because in one way, it gives you unlimited... You know, like, I mean, I switched to a hardware thing that's got some limitations, although... Still does a lot, but the beauty of software like that, it can only be limited by your space and memory.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, hardware is still great. I mean, particularly for live use. So I'm still a bit. I've only ever used the laptop in front of a live audience 3 or 4 times, really. I don't feel that comfortable with it. It can be a bit of a pain having to set up things and then move things away while other people are playing. Never really that confident with it, but it works.
How'd it go in the live situations?
I have had a couple of problems. The first time I ever used Mobius live was fairly disastrous. Well, it didn't work, basically. Only purely through my own error, I just hit a wrong button on the foot controller and didn't realize that I had, and so it all went wrong. But I still managed to make some music that people thought was okay.
Yeah.
But the looping side of it was fairly disastrous. But since then, I've had a couple of successful gigs with it.
Well, it's in, and not to make it, talk about something that wouldn't is. I mean, one of the hardest things is when you're making music, either internationally through the internet as you and I and many others do, or using some degree of technology in a live performance. It's like, sometimes it seems, you know, you're thinking, why has this got to be so hard? You're trying to create and do stuff. And there was a time when I almost poo-pooed on any technology in live, and I just wanted my guitar to pick up and plug in and to know it was cool.
Yeah, and that's always a relief to get back to that from time to time. And a lot of my live playing, well, not that I'm doing much anyway, the last year or so, but over the last few years, a lot of my live playing has been with other people in groups. So I've never really do any looping in that context. There are some people who do live looping in groups, but I've never felt the need to do that.
Well, it does thicken things, and I've done it more. I kind of it seems like when I discovered the stuff around late 2006, I sort of stuck my toe in the water and danced with it for a while, and then I really immersed. And in a group context, particularly for our listeners, Steve and I share a virtual quintet called Digit Signal. And we perform 1 to 2 times a month, all connecting through NinJam, with five of us, as I said, Peter Thorne in Sweden and Steve in the UK and myself here in New York and Jeff Duke in Florida and Ray Astorico in Florida. And we've had some really neat shows, but if I'm using loops in there, it can begin to overpower, you know, the overall sound. So I think I, for one, have to think about that and hold back sometimes.
Yeah, I have been using loops a bit in Digit Signal as well, but not that much. But I find that in a group context, it doesn't seem the same with playing in this virtual band, but playing with people in the same room, I find with loops, it's always a bit of a problem getting out of the loop, if you know what I mean. Once you get a loop going, it's difficult to end it in a creative way other than just stopping it or fading it out, which I always find a problem.
Yeah, I know what you mean there in a way, and it's putting another element in that even though people see you using this box or using this laptop, it's maybe in terms of one musician interacting to another in a physical room where they can see it. I don't know. It's almost like a, you know, a ghost in the process they may not completely understand, know how to react to.
Well, yeah, and also I think it puts a certain amount of limit on the other person that you're playing with. They more or less have to play with the loop. The loop is this. The loop isn't responding to what they do, really. Obviously, you, as a player, you can manipulate the loop and start or stop it or whatever. But while it's playing, it's just playing, which can be a bit limited in a free improvising context, I think.
Sure, sure. One thing I'm thinking about as you're talking is, in doing these podcasts, I mean, I'm always hoping for a range of audience and bringing new people to Impofferati. Maybe if somebody doesn't know what looping is, how would you describe it to somebody who doesn't know? And maybe we touched on that, but
it's like almost like multi-track recording, only you do it live. You play a certain amount of music and the looper records it and then plays it back, and you can play over what you just played and manipulate what you just played. You can slow it down or speed it up or reverse it. It's like a recording process only done live, I would say.
Well, I think that is, and one thing that jumps in my head is it was the first time I saw Robert Fripp with the two tape recorders, doing probably what turned many of us of that age on to the idea.
Yeah, of course, yeah. I saw Fripp live back in those reel-to-reel looping days, and never occurred to me that I would be able to do that myself.
Wow. Where'd you see him live at?
I saw him in a record shop Virgin Megastore. I don't know if you have those over in...
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Big Virgin record store in London. And he was playing this loop music using the two Revox tape recorders while having his hair cut by a lady called Mary Lou Green, who was a sort of an artist in the medium of hair cutting. Frick's first solo album had a picture on the cover of him.
Oh yeah, I've seen
green arty haircuts. Yeah, it was great. I also saw him a few years later when he was using digital looping technology at a place called Union Chapel in London, where he played for 8 hours.
Gosh, that brings to mind something you did back. As many of us I do, and a few others in the Improv Roddy community, we do live video webcast. Steve and I started doing those after another guy named Matt Stevens kind of turned us on to the idea. We were both doing them on a Ustream. Steve, you did something really neat. You played for a very long time. Talk about that cast.
Yeah, well, it was December the 21st for the winter solstice. I played for 24 hours. Well, I broadcast for 24 hours. It wasn't constant playing, but played for as much of the time as I could, I think. And I have no idea why I did it. Just an idea that popped into my head. And I was using Twitter a lot at the time, and I tweeted that I'd had this idea and asked for people to talk me out of it. Nobody did. So I had to play for 24 hours.
It was amazing because it was like you did stop, but not for long. You'd disappear for little cat naps. I watched you sometime in the wee hours, and it was really wild and quite a success.
Yeah, and it was more difficult, a lot more difficult than I expected, because I was actually pretty tired before I even started. So I don't know, for some reason, I think there was a lot of noise going on around here, and I didn't get much sleep the night before. So, I was tired when I started, and I did actually fall asleep playing at least one point. Which is another, wouldn't have known if that was possible not to carry on playing while falling asleep. I did. It was only a short sleep. I kept making noises anyway.
It's, I almost remember something like that. I've been so tired at times playing, and you almost start to drift off and then it come out. Well, it's almost like Inception in a way.
It is something I like to experiment with more, really, because especially for like free improvising, I find some of my best playing is at times like that. I really find new things to do. When you can't really concentrate on what you're doing, it becomes more instinctive.
Do you remember kind of a time when, and maybe it was in that solstice, that you kind of almost were snoozing and then came back?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I did fall asleep and carry on playing and then come back. But I've also had other experiences where your mind almost goes to sleep while playing. Which is not a physical falling asleep thing, but becomes almost like an out-of-body experience, I find, where you hear people talk about sort of being in the room and watching themselves, and they have these out-of-body experiences. But it can be almost like listening to yourself as another person. That particularly happens when you play for long periods of time, I find.
Well, and that's in a way how it should work, particularly with improvisation. I've had some times like that, and it's funny with me. I kind of remember, and to try to recreate that setting so that you go there.
Never learned how to actually do.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
Me either. But it's something that when it does, and it's wild. It really is a wild ride.
Yeah, that is. I do definitely find that's when I do my best playing.
Yeah. That's exciting. It's exciting to think about.
I sometimes find myself just thinking, I can't play like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I play things that I just wouldn't have thought I could possibly do.
Yeah.
I'm not really technically very good in terms of conventional playing technique. I'm not very good on any instrument.
A buddy of mine from where I'm from in Arkansas, we had some parallel guitar interests and approaches for a period during the 80s for sure, although he was just, it still is phenomenal. A guy named Richard Johnson, we were talking about, he played 12-string guitar a lot at the time, and which I was curious about. I was at that time just on 6, but I was going down some path about, you know, how do you do this? And he just looked at me very stone-faced, as he often would, and say, don't think about it. And I think that those words sort of connected with me, and I've kind of tried to be that way musically for many years.
Yeah, which is maybe another place where technology gets in the way.
Precisely.
Think about turning knobs or controlling computers, it can make that more difficult to get into that mindset.
Which kind of brings me back to how you use Mobius, because I think you've gotten Mobius to a point where maybe it's secondary, or second nature, as they'd say, where you're not having to think about it too much.
Only when I'm using it in a very basic way, which I do mostly anyway. It may seem quite complex, some of the stuff I'm doing, but it's really not.
Well, you do it well. You do it well. I had two thoughts that I wanted to ask you about. One is one of your performance things that I know of through just our talks, as well as a buddy of mine who came over there that you helped find some shows for. And you've got an experience called The Gathering. I'm curious a little bit more. Tell me about it.
Well, yeah, always happy to talk about The Gathering. It's, as far as I'm concerned, it's about the best thing in the world, really. It's we get together once a week, and anybody can turn up in London. We just get together and improvise freely, and anything goes, basically. And it sounds like such a simple concept. I can't believe people aren't doing it all over the world. But they're not. And it's an absolutely a free environment, which is something you don't really experience anywhere in life, I find. There are always restrictions on what you can and can't do, but both musically and socially, The Gathering is a completely free thing. And it was started over 20 years ago by the great Maggie Nichols, a wonderful improvising vocalist who I hope you've heard of. But, she's a real pioneer of free improvisation in the 1960s onwards. But Maggie's not living in Wales now, so we don't see her often, but The Gathering, as a life of its own, will continue, I hope.
Wow. So it's, I didn't know much about it other than when I first started hearing you promote it, I was always kind of, man, that sounds really cool.
And it does have an actual kind of international reputation. We quite often get people that are just visiting London for a week or even a couple of nights come along.
Wow.
Yeah, it's great. People from all different backgrounds and cultures and from all over the world just come along. And it's just not just music either. People can come and do dance, or some people do drawing or painting. Even like spoken word, poetry type things. It all just happens. It's not run by anybody or organized in any way. It just happens.
You just show up and begin, and it sounds like no structure at all, even in the beginning.
No structure at all.
That's wonderful. It's a set time, though, and a set day of the week, yes?
Yes, it's well, if anybody's in or near London, we're there every Wednesday evening from 9 till 11, St. Pancras Old Church in Pancras Road. So yeah, anybody's welcome anytime.
That's exciting. My friend Dave, who was over there for a few months this last spring, I think came, and though it was a different groove for him, I think he really enjoyed it. And whenever I can get over, I want to definitely be there. It sounds really cool.
It'd be great to see you there.
Yeah, I mean, it would be after all this time. Steve and I will say, are typical of several relationships that I've got in music. We've never met. I have a good friend who's met him for me, and I've known you at least, I think I first got connected with you when I produced a record for CT Collective called Reuse, and the idea was not particularly unique, but timely, and that was a CD of a number of tracks of music, all the tracks of music produced from things that we normally throw away or discard as rubbish. And it was a really neat record, and one that I have not had the time to promote as I intended. I did it almost more as a historical and archival thing, but it is out there, and you can find it on my Bandcamp site, jimgooden.bandcamp.com. But Steve, maybe let's interject the piece you did for that. And I'm racing now in my mind to recall it.
Mrs. Bridges, it was called.
Right, and it was the not the peanut butter thing. It was
a small jar with a lid, and it had a decorative sort of paper covering and an elastic tie around it. It was little small mints. They were Mrs. Bridges little mints. It's something my dad bought when he was visiting one time. And yes, and I just made various noises with this jar and the lid and the elastic tie.
Well, I tell you what, because of talking about that, I'm planning to now, I'm going to roll in, I think, on this show. I'm going to include that in the music we're putting in, though it wasn't done on Improv Friday. It was a neat, really neat piece, and it's certainly part of your current work.
So here is Steve's piece from the CT Collective Reuse CD, Mrs. Bridges. Thank you. That was Mrs. Bridges by Steve Moyes from the CT Collective CD Reuse. That was a record that I piloted as producer in spring of 2009 in conjunction with the CT Collective online community. It involved 16 artists from around the globe, and I challenged each participating artist on that to create their piece of music from things that we normally discard or treat as a one-time use, and to make that their instrument, tools, techniques, what have you, and to totally create their piece from only that. Steve, Mrs. Bridges was really a crafty piece of music, as were everybody's on that record. It was like people were pulling the most amazing sounds and textures out of the most minimal set and the most primitive set of instruments that we could put together, and I think any one CD. Here you were working with a jar that was normally containing candies or something, and you were pulling out some really amazing bass lines out of that. It was really quite crafty, great rhythms and great sounds on there. And I know that piece was a bit more thought out or pre-planned or arranged than improvised, and I know you, like I, often do a great deal of music totally spontaneous and improvised, and yet at times also like to work in a pre-arranged or pre-compositional, for lack of better words, or kind of a thought out way.
Yeah, I mean, I do, it's more a composed thing. I do occasionally compose, you know. I'm mainly an improviser, definitely, but I do the occasional composed thing, which is always fun.
It is kind of that way, and maybe that'd be something good to think to mention too, because I worked for many years in a composed way and started heavily working in the improv way around. Actually, that's what led me to Looper's Delight. But how do you? Is that something that is sometimes difficult to shift gears on for you?
Well, between composing and improvising.
Yeah, and I know they're two different things. It's like almost, what am I saying? But like, I almost never compose anymore.
I probably wouldn't compose anymore if it wasn't for computers, if I hadn't got into using computers for music. Actually, composing stuff on instruments and learning to play it is something that I actually haven't done it for years and years, never got very good at, so I'm quite happy to leave that behind. But composing on a computer is a different kettle of fish altogether, and it's quite a different creative concept, really, and something I enjoy.
What are you using for that? I mean, are you using notation and sort of?
No, I don't notate anything. It's only never for anyone else to play, so there's no need. I just put together things in multi-track recording.
How'd you find Improv Friday? And
I really can't remember how it happened. I found it via Twitter anyway. Must have been someone who I was following on Twitter, must have been taking part in it, but I can't think who it was or no.
Was it James? JC?
It may well have been, but I can't think how I could have sort of got to know him and be following him on Twitter in the first place.
Yeah.
But it was just a few people in those days. It didn't have its own website or anything. I just noticed a few people posting music with this hashtag of Improv Friday, and listened to a few, and it was all really great stuff. So I started doing some myself on a Friday, just putting the link on Twitter with the Improv Friday tag, and leave it for people to find. That's how it worked at that time.
That's pretty neat. I wasn't quite sure. I knew it was about 2 years old, and I found Improv Friday through through Jeff Duke, who had another fellow. We mentioned it. Jeff's a part of Digit Signal as well, but we knew Jeff from Looper's Delight. And I thought I joined it about spring, but it turned out I was looking back at my recording log, and the first piece I did was back in January. But it's it's just something I really look forward to every weekend.
It's great to hear people who don't normally improvise improvising, and although it's not all strictly improvised music, it's probably a lot more spontaneous than what a lot of the people involved normally do. So it's great to hear people trying different things. It's interesting, I find, the way it sometimes has almost, it's almost like there's a theme for the week, like there might be all fairly relaxed ambient type things, or there might be lively rhythmic things, and it's not planned in any way, it just almost like a collective consciousness makes this happen. Do you find that it tends to go in a particular direction sometimes?
Yeah, and it doesn't and nobody sets that up and says, okay, we're going to do, you know, everybody's going to play 4/4 time, 64 bars this week, no more, no less. It's nothing like that. It's just, you know, Thursday afternoon comes about 4 in the afternoon out there on the West Coast, and somebody launches and opens up the thread and starts posting music, and it just goes. And I won't say that, I don't think anybody is consciously doing a piece of music because Joe just did that. It's like, oh, I'm going to do something ambient.
And people just haven't even listened to what's come before.
Bingo. I mean, it just, it's really been something special to me, and I've kind of made time for it, and I'm doing, I don't know, at least 2 pieces each thread. But it just all happens.
That's right. Yeah, and it is a good motivation to do a piece of music or 2 every week.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like an oral gathering in a way. It is the same thing, pretty much.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing that has made Improv Friday special to all of us, is that we found other travelers on the road.
Well, yeah, it's great to be able to do something and have somebody listen. That's good 50% of what's great about Improv Friday, I think. It's not just the fact that you can make any music you like and put it up there, but people actually listen to it. And that can be very difficult. Even if you're not asking any money, it's often difficult to get people to listen to things out in the big wide world.
Oh, for sure. I mean, because it's been that giving in the community. I mean, I think about that because there's never a sense of judgmentalness. There's never a sense of, I don't know, it's just everybody is just very free with expressing and ideas, and
you never get any negative comments, do you?
No.
Most the times when people hear things and think that's terrible, but no one's ever said that.
Yeah, and it never feels like anybody's holding back or really trying, you know, to just think of something positive to say.
It's very honest.
I think that we all are just at that stage that you recognize that you're empathetic to the other artist, and you kind of see yourself in them in a way.
Yeah, that's right. You can always understand what people are trying to do. It always makes sense to me anyway.
Well, it's for sure. Are you thinking about doing another solstice thing this coming year?
I'm not planning to, but you never know.
which maybe it will. I mean, I think that was a marvelous idea, and that was something that I think had a lot of people kind of guffawed and going, what? You know? Because I used to work in TV a lot and did a whole bunch of telethons, which are, you know, 24-hour events, and it really reminded me of that. In a way, except it was this, you know, it was with no, we weren't raising money in what you're doing.
That was my big mistake.
Yeah, we should
have. We're asking for donations.
Should have made it the Steve Moy International Telethon.
If I could have retired by now.
Well, maybe it's ideas for the future. But I do hope that you'll, you know, I think it's a tremendous thing, and I'll support you in encouraging you to do that this December.
It would be nice to It would be nice to do it with other people, really.
Well, maybe we could think of...
Maybe get other people to drop in at various times.
Well, maybe with it, without getting overly produced, we might come up with something like that. I don't want to begin sort of thinking festival idea or anything like that, but it might be fun to, you know, to orchestrate something like that. How did NinJam come about for you? Because that's something we clearly both use.
I really haven't used NinJam a lot myself. Very little, apart from the Digit Signal sessions. I did one session with Jeff Duke, and another one with Peter Thorne and David Pereco. That's the only other two times I've used NinJam. It's something I'd like to do more of, definitely, and I must.
Well, you will.
Yeah, there's not a lot more I can say about NinJam, really. My experience of it is pretty limited, apart from Digit Signal.
Well, as I think about this, you and I talked about doing a session for a long time, and then finally did...
You and I did one once, didn't we?
We did, and that was sometime near when I joined Improv Friday, because you posted it on Improv Friday. And we had talked about it for a while, and I don't know why we talked about it so long and didn't do it, and we need to do it again. We need to do another duo session. It's just, there's always more ideas than time, it seems like. For those listening, and NinJam is, information on NinJam is at www.ninjam.com, and it is a open source creative software that allows you to connect to anybody else through the internet, generally up to 5 or 6 connections, and you can play music with each other real time. There's a wee bit of delay, but it's something that is strangely you adapt to and get used to, and for me, never know it's there.
Absolutely, me too. I'll never notice it at all. Just like playing with other people in the same room, almost.
It is, and I have recorded several records by it. Our Digit Signal recording, we got together one Friday night back in February and did it in 2 hours. Because your software, you're able to capture the session to your hard drive, so every connected source can record it, or one can mix them all together. And anyhow, it's just a marvelous tool that Daryl Sean led me to, and I thought it was about the greatest thing since sliced bread. It really changed my whole way of creative working, and to get to work with people that I've never met. Steve, you're one of them, and Peter, and I don't know, I've got a whole European family, and States family, too. A lot of people I hope to meet over time.
That's great.
And I hope you and I will meet. I hope I'll show up at the gathering one time. That'd be a hoot to just walk in.
No, actually, you should definitely let me know if you... Always there.
Oh, I'd be there, yeah. But it's no, I would. But anyhow, I do hope our paths cross. They will. I almost know. I just don't know when.
We hope so.
I'm really glad to talk to you and to bring you into this Improv Friday interview series.
It's been really enjoyable.
You've been listening to a previously recorded interview with musician Steve Moyes and his piece Falling In. We welcome your comments about the Improv Friday radio podcast series, which you may do by going to our podcast website at http://improvfridayradio.podomatic.com, where you may also subscribe to this series. If you are an avid iTunes user, you may also find us there by searching Improv Friday Radio. Additionally, friend us on Facebook, search Improv Friday Radio, and visit our Improv Friday website at http://improvfriday.ning.com. I'm your host, Jim Gooden, and this podcast has been a production of Improv Friday Radio, licensed under Creative Commons, show date November 2010.